This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today, video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight, we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Schoaf went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I was taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unbelievable, the undeniable, the
un-unable.
The un-unable. We do it right here.
Johnny and Billy, and I think we took last week off and we ran a rerun, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Yeah, it was... And it was my fault.
Your fault?
Ill.
We're not blaming anybody.
Not what people do these days. Look for somebody to blame.
Yeah, that's what they do. But we don't.
So I will take responsibility then.
If you hear a rerun, that is because
we're
sick
or
we're in Hawaii counting our millions of dollars that we get from this podcast, this radio show.
Hey, you're holding out on me because I didn't get my share.
Actually, if you do want to support us beyond just listening to the show, you can head over to our Patreon and help us out there. To get there, you can go to strangeharbor.net and you will see a Patreon link. And it all helps because, well, we really don't get paid for this.
No, we don't.
No, we do this on our own time.
It's just a labor of love.
Correct.
So thank God we're independently wealthy.
Yeah, right. No, thank God I work for a radio station that lets us use their stuff. And, you can put a couple bucks into Patreon. It helps us out.
It always helps.
Pays for gas.
Yeah, I got to buy gas to get here. It's an hour drive back and forth. So.
Same here. I'm not as far as you, though.
I don't have to
go as far as you.
I live at the end of the world. So.
You do. So any strange things happened to you in the last couple weeks?
No, we did get a lady from sent us a message on the website. Said that she saw the same red orbs in Ocean Shores that I saw.
Oh, yeah?
Which is kind of a nice verification that, you know, I wasn't just seeing things.
You're not crazy?
We've had a lot of spirit at the house lately. I mean, we normally have people that pop in, spirits that
spirit
kind of come
action.
Visit. But the last 4 or 5 days, there's just been kind of a lot of activity. I don't really know what's going on or why, but there seems to be a lot of spirit activity going on.
Well, what makes you think that they're spirits, or what's going on?
Well, it's just a feeling, you know. I like to sit up late at night and watch television, and I usually record the baseball games, and I watch them late at night when my wife goes to bed. And, so I'll be sitting there in the dark with my headphones on. I'll feel somebody touch me, which is what my wife usually does when she wants to
get frisky.
When she wants to get frisky, she comes over and touches me on the shoulder. And I'll be sitting there, and suddenly I feel a tap on my shoulder. But I look up, and nobody's there.
Hmm.
And then sometimes I feel like a cool breeze come in. In fact, the other night, it was warm out, but it was so cold in the house, I had to put a blanket on. just to sit in my chair and watch TV.
Hmm.
So that's odd. I mean, those kind of things don't usually happen.
Yeah.
But, and every way, yeah, I've been hearing, you know, little things rattling around in the kitchen. Usually that's my mother-in-law who passed away long ago.
Oh, yeah?
That's usually her when there's rattling in the kitchen. We kind of know that she comes for a visit and likes to rattle the pans in the kitchen. So, you know, that's a sense of who's there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I get that sense of who's there. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes it's unknown spirits that just come. But I think from my near-death experience, it kind of opened a portal for me that I'm able to communicate with these spirits in this way. Kind of like the guy that we had on a couple weeks ago that could talk to the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Communicated with the dead.
Yeah.
I mean, he's much more adept at it than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just kind of aware of these spirits. I can't really call them up or bring them in whenever I want. But when they show up, I'm aware of them.
Did you see that they have discovered a rogue planet?
Really?
With an unexplained glow, and it lurks beyond our solar system.
Wow.
12 times bigger than Jupiter.
That's huge.
Yeah. We had to use a radio telescope to find this bad boy. Of course, some will say that that's Nibiru that's supposedly on this 36,000-year rotation. This doesn't seem like it's on a rotation. They're saying it's a rogue kind of just floating anywhere it wants.
Yeah.
But if it is Nibiru, then whoever inhabits Nibiru were our gods.
Oh,
according to the Sumerians.
Yeah.
You know, they genetically engineered us and brought us here.
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
You know, and because nobody has had a really good, solid explanation of how life began on this planet, how human life began.
Yeah, just...
We pretty much understand a lot of other life forms, but humans seem to be different in their evolution.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, we just kind of show up and start making wheels and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we are industrious. We create and manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
We utilize the natural resources.
Utilize. I like that. You mean we just suck the life out of everything?
We rape the planet.
Yes,
is what we do.
That's what we do.
Yes, and it's becoming more and more a problem. And on this planet, so soon there will be no planet left to rape. But
speaking of that, a scientist says that we're on an irreversible path here, and it's where the time is ticking that it's going to be too late.
Yeah. At some point, we can't reverse what happens. It eventually nature will reverse all the damage we've done, but.
Without us.
We'll probably, if we continue at the rate we continue, the planet will no longer support human life. So we have to decide whether we're going to fix the planet and have humans stay here and live here, or we're just going to destroy it, all die, and move on to the next planet.
Others speculate that this is a failed star. This rogue.
Well, that
planet.
Was my first thought. It was like a burned out sun or something.
Mm-hmm.
Being that big, that was the first thing that crossed my mind. And if it glows, it could be a burned out sun.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a big planet that glows, essentially. And if it has no other, you know, if they're calling it a rogue planet that just kind of goes anywhere it wants, I believe that, you know, because our planets revolve around the sun. And that may be a shock to some people to learn that. But because our planet revolves around the sun and all the other planets, I believe that that's like a stabilizing force for our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have other planets revolving around the sun, then that force isn't exerted on that sun, and that sun then can move more easily through the universe.
I always thought, like, you know, Jupiter has the same gases as the sun. Couldn't you, like, fire a rocket at it or something, a big giant match, and just ignite it, and then we'd have another sun?
You probably could.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But what would happen if we had another sun?
I don't know. I don't know what would happen.
I mean, that would double the heat.
But it wouldn't be in the center, you know what I mean? It would be on the other side.
Cook us from all
like
sides.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's what we need.
It's like in my barbecue, I have an extra burner that when you use the rotisserie, you can put that extra burner on. So it makes it a little hotter in there.
Yeah.
First time I tried it, I turned a chicken into a chicken crisp. But I think if we had another sun that was putting out heat,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it would just fry everything in the solar system.
Hmm.
I mean, it's hard to understand sometimes that the relationship between the planets and the sun is a very delicate balance.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this planet supports life is a very delicate balance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we were to get 10 degrees hotter, this planet wouldn't support life. If we were to get 10 degrees colder, this planet would not support life. So while we can endure the extremes that we have, if it goes much beyond that, then we can't endure that unless we use our technology and our ingenuity to compensate.
I heard a good theory, philosophy, suggestion with this whole global warming conspiracy or not conspiracy or whatever. What's easier to do? Do we want the planet to adapt to us, or do we want to just adapt ourselves to the planet since it's been doing this cycle of getting warmer for how many millions of years? It's kind of inevitable. It's going to do what it's going to do, whether we contribute to it or not. What's easier, the planet to adapt to us or us to adapt to the planet? Meaning, okay, well if it's hot, take your coat off.
Well, when we're talking hot, we're talking maybe 130, 140 degrees.
In some areas of the planet are already getting that.
They're starting to get that, yeah. I mean, it gets up to almost 120 degrees in Phoenix, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
There are places in Africa that get up almost that hot.
Do we adapt to that, and do we slowly adapt to that? As the Earth gets warmer and warmer, are we going to be able to take it and then...
Like the frog in the boiling water.
Yeah.
If you put the frog in the water when it's cold and you slowly bring it to a boil, you know, the frog doesn't jump out. But it dies. The frog still dies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you drop it directly into the hot water, it will try to get out. Yeah, I don't think that the planet will adapt to us. I think the planet will squash us.
Well, yeah.
It's very, very powerful. The power of water alone. I don't know if anybody's ever been whitewater rafting. When you get into the rapids and you feel the power that the water has,
mm-hmm.
even a small rapids has much more power than you can overcome physically. And so you're at its mercy.
Mm-hmm.
When the waves come in the ocean, even relatively small waves, it's very difficult to overcome that pressure.
I got a police scanner recently.
Did you?
Because, you know, I live close to a tourist community, and we have a lot of traffic issues because people don't know how to drive in a confident way. So I want to hear what's going on. Just this last weekend, I think there were at least two or three rescues from people swimming out in the surf in the Pacific Ocean and getting stuck out there. And those aren't really huge, huge waves.
No.
They get stuck out there, even strong swimmers.
Absolutely. And there are rip tides. That's a tide that will pull you out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's not, once you get caught in that, it pulls you so far out you can't swim back in. And we have those all the time. I live, you know, fairly close to the beach there, and there's probably four or five times during the summer, there's a rescue that goes on the beach. We've had, in the 15 years that I've lived in Ocean Shores, I think we've had 5 or 6 people die in the beach, on the beach right by my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been maybe even more on some of the other beaches. So Mother Nature is just, it's not something that you play with. It will bite, and it will bite hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the storms that have come in on the East Coast and just obliterated small towns. Look what happened in New Orleans with Katrina. I mean, the place flooded, the wind blew everything apart. Mother Nature, and the storms are getting, they're getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
As we destroy this planet, the storms get stronger and stronger. And eventually, we won't be able to endure them. You know, it'll get really hot. People think that global warming means that it's just warming up. But it also means that other portions of the planet are cooling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I live in Ocean Shores. We've had maybe this summer 1 or 2 days above 70 degrees. Most of the time, the temperature's been in the mid to low 60s, and evening temperatures dropping into the, you know, low 50s. When the rest of the area west of us, or I mean east of us, is warming up, we're cooling down. It's getting colder and colder, except in the wintertime. We used to get a couple inches of snow every winter. Now we get none. It's rare if we get, you know, 1/2 inch of snow in the wintertime. We rarely get those extremes that we used to get. It does get cold, but it's not as cold as it used to be. So, again, everything is warming up. Everything is changing, which is why they went from global warming to climate change, because, you know, global warming, even though the planet is warming, I think that in the last 10 years, the planet has warmed by 4 or 5 degrees, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. It changes our weather patterns. You know, I'd have to look it up to find the exact numbers. But we are the stewards of this planet. One of the things that when I've had my near-death experiences that I was told by the, you know, whoever they are out there, the gods or the spirits or whatever, is that one of the things that we have to learn while we're here on this planet is how to take care of our environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we destroy the environment on this planet, we're affecting the entire universe. It's not just us. It's the entire universe that gets affected. There is a balance in nature. Everything in nature is balanced. But when we cut down all the trees and we pollute the air, it changes that balance. It throws us out of balance. Have you seen the pictures of all the debris in the oceans? I mean, our oceans are filthy. Miles and miles of it.
Didn't they say it was like one of them was like the size of Texas or something like that? I might be exaggerating.
I think it was the size of Rhode Island, but...
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, there's debris fields that are bigger than states floating in the ocean, and it's mostly plastic and stuff that probably could have been recycled,
mm-hmm.
but instead it was thrown away. And then, of course, you know, look what happened in Japan a few years ago with the tsunami and earthquakes and hurricanes. You know, it destroyed several small towns, and it washed a lot of garbage out into the sea. If you live on in a coastal town, you know that about 2 years after that big tsunami, we had boats, we had debris, all kinds of things come floating in from that Japanese tsunami. It takes about a year and a half to 2 years for it to float across the ocean. But we're still getting things. There's still things washing up on the beach. Just a couple years ago, there was actually a rather large boat that came aground that was from Japan. It might have even been large enough to call a ship. I think it was a fishing boat or something. But we had this nature, this environment that we live in is very, very powerful, and it's way stronger than we are. If we want to fight it, if we want to try to destroy it, it will bite us back, for sure.
I was watching some documentaries about, you know, ancient civilizations and whatnot, and yeah. They all seem to say, we don't know where they went. We don't know what happened to them. Could it be that the Earth did its cataclysmic thing and wiped everything out, and the ruins are just what stood the test of time and of the Earth doing its thing, and that's where all the people went? They just demised in a cataclysmic and started over and reset?
Yes.
By the look on your face, it looks like you just got dumber listening to me.
No, I'm much smarter listening to you. It helps me to think when you talk. Yes, I mean, that's very, that's a feasible hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
That many of these civilizations that existed have been wiped out by the environment. There's some evidence that some of the South American civilizations, like the Incas and the Mayas and the Aztecs and so on, some of those people may have been wiped out by disease.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some evidence that there may have been some weather catastrophes. And there's also some evidence that it may have been another human invasion, which is, you know, another thing altogether. I mean, we are sometimes our worst enemy.
Mm.
We fight each other and we battle each other. And, you know, we want to do harm to each other. And we have people that are greedy and want power and control over everything and everybody. One thing that I've learned in my lifetime, I've been very fortunate to be able to talk with people from all over the world. And what I've found is that the average person in any other country, and in this country, they like to get along with people. They want to get along. They're decent people. You know, hardworking, they're educated, have a mom and a dad. And, you know, they're not really any different than we are. But governments are. People that want power and control over us. People that are greedy and want to own everything just for their own benefit. That's where we run into trouble. If the average person from any country got together, they'd probably get along fine. Once you start introducing this power and control issue, that's when things start to go bad. We've become more selfish, more self-centered, and we've stopped reaching out and helping people. And it's important to keep the balance in society as we keep the balance in nature. And that means we have to give a little bit of ourselves. It's actually caring about them, motivating them, making them see that there's hope rather than that the situation is hopeless. Allowing them to not only do for themselves, but once they do do for others as well. Almost every person that I've known who's been homeless in their life and suffered through that kind of lifestyle has been some of the kindest and most giving people that I've ever known.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and coming up, Princess Di.
Princess Di. What's going on with Princess Di?
Well, she's dead, but
we're going to find out, aren't we?
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and let's see. Oh,
Princess Di. You were going to tell us about Princess Di.
I was watching. I like to watch documentaries, okay?
Yeah.
You're going to hear that a lot from me. And I was watching a recent Princess Diana documentary that produced either diary entries or letters saying she's going to die in a car wreck, and if and when this happens, it was Charles and the family that did it.
In the years before Princess Diana was killed, she told many people that the British establishment was planning to eliminate her.
Diana had left a note saying that she thought that somebody was going to kill her and that it would be in a car accident.
Diana asked her lawyer, told him that she had from a very confidential source in the palace, Prince Philip, planning to get rid of her in a car accident.
She wrote this letter to her butler, Paul Burrell, telling him that the royal family were planning her death. Diana said the same thing to her lawyer, Lord Mishkin, who made a note of a prediction. This old British establishment lawyer realized that the note could have devastating consequences for the royal family. So 3 weeks after her death, he handed it to Britain's chief policeman, Lord Condon. The police chief also realized its significance, so he concealed it and kept it secret for 3 years. In 1995, Diana summarized her fears in a phone call to a producer of this film.
If you're a strong woman in my environment, you're a problem. So I'm a hell of a problem. I don't have time, an awful lot of time for hobbies, but keeping alive, one of them. Keeping alive, keeping alive, keeping alive, keeping alive.
Sadly, she signally failed in this quest. Lord Condon wasn't the only senior policeman to hide the lawyer's note. Lord Stevens, his successor as police chief, concealed it for a further 3 years. Both men broke the law. Both men were made lords by the Queen.
What do you think of that?
I think that's interesting. You know, it very well could be. Their marriage was not necessarily a very happy one. You know, when you're a royal, you have a certain image that has to be kept up, and that image got tarnished a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I suppose that there might have been, you know, some effort made to deliberately ram her car and run it off the road. Or
what do you think of them apples?
I think those are apples. You know, when you have that kind of event, anything is possible. I'm reading a book where the main character is a U.S. Marshal, and he's digging dirt on a politician, and the politician has some henchmen. So the henchmen run a pickup truck into his wife's car and injure her very badly. And, of course, he figures it out very quickly and is now going after the politician for doing this. And so, you know, I think that sometimes there are these little conspiracies because it's like I was talking before, you know, power and control are so important to weak people. If they don't have the strength to accept their life, accept who they are, you know, they look to exploit others to give them that sense of accomplishment, that sense of being somebody. You know, we all want to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the reality is that sometimes just being who we are is good enough, and that each one of us is somebody, you know, in our own right. We don't have to be famous. We don't have to be a celebrity. We just have to be who we are. And if you have a skill or a talent, puts you in the public eye, wonderful. If you have some knowledge, like a scientist or something, that puts you in the public eye and makes you popular, that's great. But if you're just the average person, you know, you go to work every day, you come home, you know, you spend your weekends with your family, you barbecue, take little vacations, maybe you travel. That's who you are. And that's got to be adequate. And this whole power and control thing is, it really doesn't get you anywhere. It creates more misery than it creates happiness. What do you think?
I don't know. If I had billions of dollars, I'd be pretty happy.
You think you would? I know people that have money, lots and lots of money, and I don't think they're any happier than I am, you know.
You're a pretty happy guy, though.
Well, yeah, I am, because I accept who I am, where I am, what I am.
What are you?
If I told you that, I'd have to tell you what planet I come from.
And you know, speaking of that, who is that ufologist gal?
I can see her face, but I can't think of her name.
She looks like an alien to me.
Maybe she is. I believe that there are aliens on this planet, people that came here from other dimensions,
mm-hmm.
maybe other planets, other parts of the universe. We certainly aren't alone. I mean, my own personal experiences have taught me that very well. You know, I think that there probably are people that are aliens or something, but I don't think that they're here to harm us or too bad. I think they're here to live the same life that we live.
If she is an alien, she's educating us on aliens.
Yes. And I think that, you know, when we look at history, we look at cave dwellers who drew pictures on the walls of the caves.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes there's spaceships or alien beings depicted in these pictures, these pictographs or whatever that are on the cave walls. They didn't just make that up. I mean, they had to get that from somewhere. They had to be exposed to it
mm-hmm.
in order to think that way. So maybe there are. Maybe they've been here for a very long time. Maybe we are them. Maybe our DNA is from another planet or another dimension.
There's a conspiracy about that.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I don't think anybody is conspiring to do this to us or to introduce these aliens. I think they're just here of their own accord.
I meant about our whole DNA and stuff.
What's the conspiracy about our DNA?
That aliens genetically... Well, there's a couple different versions. Aliens genetically modified the original inhabitants of this planet with them and created us.
That's a theory, yeah.
And if you look at a primate's DNA strand, there's these nice pretty rows. And then if you look at ours looks like they've been fused. I'll post some pictures on strangeharbor.net and show you exactly what I'm talking about. And
okay.
You'll see that our strands look like they've just been seared. It's really strange. And not a lot of people talk about it. And I don't know why.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it's just a lack of knowledge. We know, we talk about DNA, and we know how to identify it. We know how to use it to identify specific human beings. Beyond that, we don't know a lot about it. We don't know where it comes from or why we have DNA, how it came to be. And we know that it's the building blocks of our living existence. We still don't know a lot about it. And I think that, you know, there's a good chance that maybe it was introduced by aliens to create humans. I mean, look at how different we are, how different people are from every other being on the planet. Even our closest relatives, which would be primates, they're covered in hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they sometimes walk on all fours. You know, we stand upright. We don't have a lot of hair. Well, some of us do, but...
Easy.
But we look different. We behave different. We're much more fragile. Can you imagine living outdoors all the time?
Mm.
Yeah, we can't do that.
No.
We have to have shelter.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have food. We have to have warmth.
Every other animal on this planet lives in harmony with its environment. We don't.
We don't. We live in opposition to our environment.
Mm-hmm.
The big question is why. I mean, I don't, you know, all I can do is speculate and guess because, you know, I'm not a DNA scientist or I'm actually a social scientist, but that doesn't count for much because it helps us to understand societies and human behavior, but it doesn't answer the question where we came from or how we got here. Or how we evolved. You know, clearly when we study ancient man, you know, many, many thousands or even, you know, a million years ago, we understand that they had more hair, you know, that they walked hunched over, that they were probably closer to primates than we are, and that we have evolved over this time. Why? How did we separate from that primate lineage? So primates continued on, very little evolutionary change, but human beings changed radically. How do we explain that?
I don't know.
Alien intervention is a good way to do it. But how did they do that? I mean, did they come here in a physical spaceship? Did they travel interdimensionally? And did they kind of stick around to see their handiwork? Or did they leave?
There's no such thing as aliens. Come on.
I think there is. I'm...
We're the only intelligent life in the universe.
I'm probably 100% convinced that there's a lot more life in the universe. And I think there are societies that are far advanced from what we are. And I think that there are societies that aren't nearly as advanced as we are.
Do you think NASA and or the government, they're hiding anything that they've found on any other planets that we've explored? Mars, Moon, flybys on other planets?
Well, you know, we get reports from the Mars rover and stuff. And, you know, every time they find something that's unusual, we usually hear about it. So I don't know how much they're covering up. I don't know what the benefit to that is. If you have a conspiracy to cover something up, number one, there has to be secrecy in a small group. Number two, there has to be a payoff. There has to be a benefit to doing that. Keeping that kind of thing secret, I really don't see what the payoff is, you know, other than maybe these people that have this knowledge are paranoid. But, again, especially with the space thing, I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of people that are involved with this, and there are probably millions more that monitor it. So, you know, if they're keeping this secret, I don't know how they'd be keeping it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be very difficult to do. So I think that we're being told pretty much what they know. There might be a handful of people that know something much more than we do. You know, like I said, I've been to the Roswell Museum in New Mexico, and if you can walk through that museum and come out the door at the gift shop and not be convinced that some kind of alien craft landed there back in the 40s, or what, it was 1947, at Roswell, the Roswell incident. And if you can go through there and you can see the evidence that's there and see the evidence of what appears to be a government cover-up, you have to then believe that other beings have traveled here, maybe on a daily basis. We don't know. But I would think that those beings probably wouldn't want to keep themselves secret from us, because we're kind of a violent society. I mean, if I came here from a very peaceful planet and I mingled with the people on this planet, I would get the sense that we're a very violent society. We have wars where we kill millions of people. We have people shooting each other every day. We watch violent television shows and violent movies. You know, and I'm one of the people that watches it. I'm a big fan of Die Hard and and some of the Schwarzenegger movies. But, you know, at the same time, I'm a nonviolent person. I know, without a doubt, that whatever I watch on the big screen or on my television isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why where we have to start separating. We have to separate what's real from what's not real.
How different is the Vietnam War that you see depicted in movies and TV, you know, where actors are involved? How different is it from the real thing?
Well, actually quite a bit, because when you watch a movie, you're watching, what, an hour and a half, 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
And they have to pack into that hour and a half and 2 hours the experience that we as Vietnam veterans lived every day, 24/7, 365 days a year. How do you cover everything that goes on in an hour and a half movie?
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You're basically touching on some of the experiences, but not all of them.
Like the battle stuff. How does that
some
compare?
Some of that's pretty real. Mm-hmm. I think the movie Platoon was pretty good. Mm-hmm. What was the other one? Full Metal Jacket. Those battle scenes were fairly real. Mm-hmm. There's a movie called We Were Soldiers. That one was fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Where they depicted the battle of Dien Bien Phu. And there was there's been some other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. They depict an accurate moment. But they don't give you the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does it feel like to be in the jungle when the sun goes down and to know that there are not just human beings out there that would like to kill you, but there are animals and snakes and insects and things that, you know, can do just as much damage.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things in Vietnam was the environment. That the environment itself was extraordinarily hostile.
Mm-hmm.
So to try to depict that in a film, I mean, the best you're going to do is give someone a momentary sense of what it was like. But if you're a soldier who served in that, you were there. This was not just a moment. It was your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. Every moment of every day. It's hard to say that a movie can depict what it was really like to be there. You know, and they can't depict what it felt like, you know, to be 13,000 miles from home, from your friends, your families, your, people that you care and care about and love. You know, when we watch a movie and it depicts a scene, it's only a momentary glimpse into what actually happened. So probably no one will ever know what it was like to be there except the people that were there and experienced it. And that's okay. It's all right. You don't have to know. You don't have to know what it was like. In fact, you know, I experienced it. I was there. I was in combat for 10 months. I got blown up and shot. And during that 10 months, I had diseases. I had malaria twice. And I'm glad that not everybody has to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy that, you know, that you, Johnny, don't have to go through that. I'm happy that other people didn't. Only right now, about 8% of the population are veterans, have served in the military. That's enough. It's enough. Everybody doesn't have to have that experience. It's life-changing, for sure. I'm glad that not everybody has to have that experience. You know, I'm glad that my son didn't have to have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a pleasant experience. It wasn't a joyful experience. There were some joyful moments. Time spent with friends.
Do you ever hear from any of your friends from the military?
I do. Probably my closest buddy while I was there lives in New Jersey, and we talk on the phone probably 2-3 times a month.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I've been out to visit he and his family at their home, and he and his family have been out here to visit me.
Mm-hmm.
So we stay in touch. We didn't stay in touch for probably about 40 years, you know, maybe 37, 38 years, I think it was.
Wow.
But then we connected again.
Mm-hmm.
We found each other, and we've remained close. What was amazing is the first time I saw him after we had this big coming together, the first time I saw him, I knew who it was immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, I hadn't seen him in 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately knew who he was. There was no, that's like, and the amazing thing is, we look almost like brothers. I guess the older you look, the more you look like the next guy. But you would swear that we were related in some way.
Yeah.
You know, we have the same hairline, which is none.
Yeah.
And, we both had a beard and a similar build, similar height. That's been nice. It's been nice to talk with him and kind of share those times. And he's brought up things that I'd forgotten, and I brought up things he'd forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of expanded our horizons a little bit about what we did and how we did it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's healing. It's a very healing thing to do that. There was a lot of damage done mentally in that war. In fact, in every war, you know, we don't understand how much we damage people mentally in war. We have a pretty good idea about how physically we damage people, but the mental damage is sometimes far worse.
Speaking of mental, that's going to do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. We didn't quite get to everything we wanted to get to, but there's always next week, right?
I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
Unless something really strange happens.
Ooh, we hope.
Yeah.
Right? If you'd like to listen to back episodes, I need to apologize. I don't have our entire archive re-uploaded because this stuff takes space. We run out of space because, you know, we're not rich. And it's like trying to fit 30 gallons into a 10-gallon tank. So we got to, you know...
Yeah.
Try to find alternative means. So what I've been doing is I've been uploading past old episodes to YouTube and using their bandwidth and space so we can make room for these new fresh episodes that are available on iTunes and right here every Sunday at 4 p.m. on KBKW. So if you want to hear more, strangeharbor.net. Anything else that I overlooked?
I think you covered it.
Stay strange?
Strange.
No, stay strange?
Stay strange. Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.